Then he finally gets back to this issue of fundamental issues underlying the Eurozone crisis. Finally, we're getting to some answer to that original question we were given. He writes, "Behind such immediate problems lurks the fundamental question of whether the construction of the Eurozone can be completed by the fiscal union it requires to operate as a true common currency. That would involve a surrender of sovereignty, which would stick in the throats of some states, starting with France. The balance of power means that advancing the process that began with the Treaty of Rome in 1957 would inevitably be done on terms set by Germany and its economically strong allies in Northern Europe. That would be difficult to resolve by the kind of muddling through that we've seen in the current crisis." Quote. So we're going to be thinking about what is being planned in putting out policy pieces like this. Where are they going with this notion, nation state? But one thing I think we can say with certainty, and I didn't mean to spend so much time on that because I want to get to those other questions we talked about. But one thing we can say for certain about this bunch of guys is that they've got a lot of allegiance to their tribe. When you read a book from one of their members, like Henry Kissinger's, on China, you cannot help but appreciate their sense of deep self-allegiance and grieve a bit for the absence of anything like it in We the People, anything like their allegiance to tribe. And I suspect that their sense of superiority is rooted in this, fed by this, that they consciously serve their higher purpose, while we in the U.S. worked to soul death, use consumerism to fill that abyss, spill our guts to psychiatrists or similar alchemists, and circularly search for some meaning in all of this. But because we're kept in boxes, we can't look long. We can't see our brothers and sisters next to us. We're trapped in the panopticon until now, when it's all starting to break down. With new thoughts churning, new possibilities brewing, and being sounded out loud. There's a moment in Red Ink when Robert Schaefer chastises the professional left for its, quote, useless class analysis, unquote, endlessly categorizing we the people. And it's true that all this describing and categorization of us may serve power by providing mechanisms that keep us divided, but it don't serve us. And I found myself wondering, when will we, as assiduously, with even greater alacrity, devote all our energies and efforts to realizing what brings us together and not what keeps us apart? And then, by way of contrast, Robert Schaefer gives the Marxist class analysis, which he presents as an exemplar because it allowed Marx to look far, he says, as opposed to categories changing day by day. It zeroes in on what's key, he says, that ultimately power shrinks and we become everything. Of course, power sees this problem of we becoming everything, our ever-expanding immiseration, leading to our being one big we standing against a microscopic elite, has focused on this problem for centuries. Bentham labored long to solve it with his beloved panopticon. And I want to talk more about that, but I found myself thinking, what if all the Marxists in the world could see that class is not the product of some inevitable history, but consciously crafted from day one and daily by the tiny few who know very well what they're doing, and that our growing numbers don't mean a thing if it's their thoughts we're thinking, power's thoughts, their project serving, if we're kept disconnected from what gives true thoughts, the authentic, the only thing that deserves our allegiance, our grandmother, our earth, our brothers and sisters.